You guys hear me okay? Hi, everyone. Louis DeLucia here from Ice Miller. We are waiting for a couple of minutes for additional people to join. People are joining fairly rapidly as I speak, so we'll hold off for a minute or two before we start. So bear with us, and then we'll start substantively. Thank you. All right, it's 5:01. We'll go ahead and start. A lot of people online, and again, like I said, people are joining, but we'll go ahead and start with introductions and hopefully everyone will be on board when we get to the substance of the meeting. So thank you again, everyone, for joining the town hall for AIRN Liquidation Trust and its wind down entities. We're here to discuss the usual agenda, which we've been discussing at each of these meetings, which will cover real estate, a tax update, litigation update, and your questions, of course, and then a closing by the trustee. On the call and the video with me from Ice Miller is Michael Ott, and I believe Allison Fiedler may be joining. I think she should be here. We also have representatives of AIRN, which are Rick Budd and Tommy Fierro. And for the liquidation trustee representative, Matthew Ward is here as well. So we have a full house. Bill Waldy and others from A&M, and Rick Barry from Barry Consulting may also be on as well. So those are representatives of the liquidation trust and of wind down entities. So again, we'll go through the normal pattern of discussing the real estate update. There'll be some addressing of the tax questions through the tax update. We'll provide a litigation update and address your questions. So let's go ahead and start with the real estate update.
Okay. Can you hear me okay, Lewis?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. So I just want to, just the first page, there is a LinkedIn link here. So we do have a LinkedIn page for people that can access LinkedIn or regularly access LinkedIn. So it does include updates on the projects, pictures, announcements, construction progress. And for those of you that can't, we're going to be having probably an easier to use website containing the same information, but for people it'll just be, I think, easier to access. So we hope to have that in place before the next meeting. So if we go to the next slide, which is our table of contents, similar, we're not adding assets, so it's the same assets as before. The next page gives you the address of every site. And again, we welcome people to visit the sites, talk to us. If it's a existing building, we're happy to have you see the building with or without us. But that's the exact addresses, as well as the approvals and number of units. Next slide, please. So this is an announcement by MidCap Financial, who's a subsidiary of Apollo. Basically, it represents, this is a very successful closing of two facilities, which really represents a monumental achievement for AIRN and really a testament to the management team. So we've rebuilt a high level of credibility in the marketplace, considering emergence from Chapter 11 just 2 years ago, coming out from a Ponzi scheme and being able to attract $97 million in fresh capital from, you know, respected financial institution. So it's really for both facilities, the Grand as well as the Metro. And when we get into those specific assets, I will discuss in a little more detail how it plays in. We had to file a court motion to get approval to proceed here. Our advisory board was not inclined to support the transaction, but several weeks later, we were able to reach an alignment and secure some conditional authorization. I think it's important to know that the sales price for these two assets will be in excess of $170 million, with a net profit of approximately $90 million. So it's really, for us and for all the work that's been gone in, and the work to be continued, obviously, in building the assets, it's We think it's a great repositioning and terrific for the stakeholders, which is you. So next page. And we can go to the next page. So the station, 4901 Bergen Line, this asset is in the marketplace with CBRE. They have what they call a call for offers. So we are expecting the first offers from the group, which would be next week, March 18th. There has been a considerable interest in the property, probably 35 or 40 in-person tours with the site. We did manage to get the project stabilized up at 97% leased. We have, just to recall, when we took over the project in the bank, it wasn't quite complete. We obtained the retail tenant, finished the building, and then refinanced the existing mortgage, which was quite an onerous mortgage with S3, with the assistance of Vice Miller, reducing their claim from about $39 million down to $32 million. So we'll have a much better update for you next quarter. But in fact, we would hope that offers are acceptable and we can get to a closing within the next 2 to 3 months. So that is 4901. So let's go to the next slide. So the Grand, which is part of the financing that we did with MidCap, we are completed the building. It's right at the end of 2024, and we're now in excess of 90% leased. So it's been a great effort, obtaining better than 10 leases a month. So we expect that we will be fully stabilized within about 2 or 3 months. We will then want to get through the renewal period during the summer, and we would expect to go to market with this asset probably sometime in the fourth quarter of this year, which would result in a transaction probably in the first quarter of 2027. The way this, we had an existing mortgage here with Connect One Bank. So part of this facility, the new facility that we obtained from MidCap, it basically refinanced out the $54 million facility, refinanced out Connect One Bank. And the structure is quite unusual that we have basically a $31.5 million line of credit. So we're not obligated to take it down. Obviously, we don't pay interest on it if we don't take it down. But we have it there to the extent that we see other opportunities. But it's overall, it's additional liquidity for the trust. I can emphasize it's a highly unusual structure with a mortgage that we were able to obtain. Next is our remaining unit in Delray Beach, the 1070 project, 1068 next door, which we sold in the summer for $4.25 million, I think. So this site is listed at $4.1 million, the last unit. It's been extremely slow the last 5-6 months in terms of traffic and offers. And, you know, there's as many reasons as there are people you ask as to why that is the case. And people aren't bashful if they want to offer lower prices. So we're really hopeful that, you know, over the next, you know, several months, we'll get a viable buyer in here. We've been reluctant, and we don't want to dump the property. We don't see a need for that. Our carrying costs are pretty minimal. The taxes are about $20,000 a year, and we don't have any debt on the property. So we want to make sure we get the optimal sales price for the trust. next project or next is the Metro. So the Metro is the other part of the MidCap facility that we did. This was a $43 million construction loan. Just a little history on the Metro. It was a piece of land with approvals and permits. The city of West New York was basically reneging on the permits. Again, with Ice Miller support, we went into the bankruptcy court for clarification to get those permits reinstated at under the old codes, which were more favorable to us, certainly financially. So that was successful. That permit then allowed us to start building less than a year ago. As of now, we are about 25% complete, 26% complete. Vertical construction has started, and our MidCap loan will start to fund probably in June or July. And this will turn into, as we go through, we're expecting a completion date probably, probably looking at a CO by next September 27, then a lease up probably for 15 months or so, and then probably some kind of a 29 sale, 29 or first quarter 30. But from a piece of land that was under attack by the city, we think we've turned this into what will be about a $95 million asset. So it's a great success story. Next project, the Water Club in Philadelphia. This project was originally designed and approved for townhouses. Subsequently, it was approved for multifamily apartments. As we continue to navigate between financings and the marketplace, we are making sure we're relooking at the townhouse option as well as the multifamily to come up with what we think is going to be the most efficient and effective and profitable route to go. So we're in the process of doing that now with council and designer, and their land planner, and assessing, the marketplace. And we want to make sure as we go forward that we have the best route. So we'll have that defined by the time we meet again in next quarter. But that's our status. So we do have permits today. We'll be updating you on this. The next page is our location site project, which we think is terrifically located in South Philadelphia with enormous amount of retail, access to the highway, access to West Philadelphia, New Jersey. It's an excellent location on the water. Next slide, Legacy Harbor, the marina. We've been, as you recall, right, our marina was destroyed back 3.5 years ago. We got the permits reinstated. We're rebuilding the marina with Bellingham Marine. It's 131 slips. We are, as you can see the pictures there of the progress being made. We believe our CO will probably be in June. To be able to open the marina. We were delayed by maybe 60 days or so. We have our fuel dock permits ready to go. We've retained a management team, not dissimilar to what we have with Gray Star managing the Grand and 4901, an entity called Coastal Marina Management that we have. Which is going to come in to add some professional management to us as we go through our lease up in the project. Not dissimilar to a building, right? We can complete a building, but the value is when you actually have tenants in the building and it's stabilized. It's the same thing with the marina, right? The marina is great. we know how much it costs, but the value is when you start to add slip rentals and other sources of income there. So we're looking forward to that happening. Like I said, right now, it looks like June. There is specific websites for people that, you know, directly with the marina down at the bottom, the fmlegacyharbor.com, as well as there's drone video of the construction for anybody who's interested in clicking on that link at Google. But the team's done a terrific job there, and it's going to be a great asset. We, at the same time, the asset is listed with CBRE for both the marina and the upland piece, which we'll discuss in a minute. There has been interest with the marina by large marina operators, which would be strategic buyers. However, we're pretty convinced that, as I said before, that we're going to have to show them that there's the slip rental market, which we're absolutely convinced there is, because post-storm, there were quite a few marinas that were lost on the West Coast. Next slide. Guttenberg. Guttenberg, right, we completed the demo here and the asbestos abatement. The city gave us a developer's agreement. We're waiting for a building permit, but we haven't made a final decision. When we get the building permit, we will make a decision as to whether this should be built or whether we should just put the land up for sale. And we have the approvals, but like I say, we'll know that decision probably in the next 45 days or so as to which way we're going to go. Next slide, please. So now we're back in Fort Myers, but we're on the upland piece. So we have our approvals here for up to, you know, 500 units. In addition, we have the restaurant, which was vacated by Landry's and Trader Joe's. We've entertained lease offers for the restaurant, but what we found is that we can't satisfy the lease tenants right now until the marina is open, and B, we have more direction on the upland piece. The restaurant people want too many guarantees, which we can't give them, right? So we don't want the tail wagging the dog because of the lease on the restaurant. But as we said, CBRE has been actively marketing the property. We've had significant interest in the last 90 days for parties looking to potentially do a JV here. JV basically is where we're going to contribute the land. We may or may not, you know, participate further than that, but there have been two different parties that we're working with right now to come up with something that might look profitable for us. But in the interim, as I said, the properties are listed for sale. The two Fort Lauderdales, which are across the street from each other, and both approved, albeit for slightly different numbers of units. We're in more advanced discussions, I would say, there for a JV on one of the properties. It's looking, you know, very attractive to us. It would involve reducing the size of one of the buildings down to more like 250 units for apartments. But it's, you know, we don't have all the details yet, but our initial underwriting seems pretty attractive. And again, we'll be back with you, hopefully with some more definitive news next quarter. I think that's the update, Lewis.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you very much, Rick. Next, we'll turn to the investor tax questions. I think, Tommy, you're going to address that. Am I right?
Is everyone able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. So, I mean, this is kind of the usual disclaimer that we, you know, that we display every town hall, that the liquidation trustee and liquidation trust professionals are not providing and cannot provide individual tax advice. We urge you to consult with your individual tax advisors. You know, everyone's likely aware at this point that the 2021 and 2022 AARs have been filed. They've been mailed out, but if you have not received a copy yet, they are available electronically. You can email us at info@airnmanagement.com. These AARs do not trigger prior year amendments, you know, of your personal tax returns. They'll get reported on your 2025 returns that are due in 2026. The recurring forms, the 2025 grantor letters, will be available in September 2026. That's pretty much it for this batch. If you have any questions or any document requests, you can email us at info@airnmanagement.com and somebody will get back to you within a day or two. That's all I have. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Tommy. We'll go ahead and move to the litigation update now. As many of you already know, there is a website that contains full dockets of all pending litigation. It has a full docket of the underlying case, and that's at Omni Agent Solutions. The docket link and the Omni website is there for your use. If you have not already accessed it, we recommend that you do so. There's a lot of information there, including recordings of these meetings that have been done in the past, and the future ones will be recorded and posted there as well. So, separate and apart from the core litigation cases where we are suing people for recoveries on your behalf, there were two fairly related to real estate motions that were made that Rick alluded to in part, which include the motion to enforce the plan for the Pennsylvania projects that he discussed, as well as a motion to enforce the plan as to the Florida properties, in particular the Fort Myers, in connection with avoiding, as the plan and law would provide, as we argue to the court, that those transactions be tax exempt pursuant to the bankruptcy code and the plan. Both motions were successful, and that should enable us to, through the development of the properties, avoid a substantial cost to the trust and to the development of those properties, which then translates to greater profitability and returns on those properties. Along the same lines, since we last had our town hall, we've had litigation recoveries of $24.4 million. That does not include claim waivers, which would drive that higher, meaning that there are parties who claim that had claims related to against the trusts, or should say against NRIA, that we were able to defeat and or compel them to waive as part of settlements. And that is additional recoveries because it frees up cash. But we're not quantifying that here for this purpose, but the $24.4 million is realized for your benefit. It does include some claim waivers as to unsecured creditors that were ahead of you. So, for example, one settlement included a multi-million dollar unsecured creditor claim waiver that would have, if successful in the case, been paid ahead of investor claims, but we were able to get that waived and paid from that creditor. So actual cash. So those claim waivers are included, but investor claim waivers where certain individuals or entities asserted claims that were allegedly investor claims, we were able to get those waived, but that's not included in that number. All right, next page. So some of the key litigations, we'll hit on some of these. It's a little bit more detail this time, only because we want to give you an example of how much is really going on. There are 14 to 15 litigations that are discussed here. Some are pending, some are forthcoming. But as I mentioned in prior meetings, there is, as Tommy indicated, a global disclaimer. That global disclaimer is that this is litigation. Our adversaries are often listening. They've quoted us in the past. So we will not be giving as detailed on the litigation strategies or litigation infirmities or litigation tactics that we'll be using because they may be listening and employ them against us. So this is going to be an overview of what is publicly available as well as what we can share with you generally. So Bank of America, big litigation against Bank of America. We defeated recently their motion to dismiss the case. So the case survived, including the aiding and abetting fraud claims against Bank of America. Just to give some context to the nature of the claims, we have asserted in that complaint the $233 million in suspicious activity flowed through 32 NRA accounts at Bank of America from roughly 2016 to 2022. 196 million more flowed through those accounts after the Bank of America first issued their account closure efforts or notices in November 2017 to 2018. In addition, $30 million of distributions to investors were paid from Bank of America accounts, largely sourced from other investor and lenders. So in other words, cash came to those accounts and went to investors. $43 million was transferred from NRA accounts at Bank of America to affiliates of NRIA, who we've already sued in separate cases. And the point is there that this is a flow of funds that through Bank of America that we've asserted aided and abetted the fraud. I'm not going to say more than that, but we defeated the motion to dismiss, and we are in this substantial discovery schedule now, and hopefully this litigation will be successful for you all. Next case. Valley Bank. We are doing a similar litigation against Valley Bank. Valley Bank also brought a motion to dismiss, and we defeated that. Allegations of aiding and abetting fraud and other claims survived against Valley Bank. Of course, some smaller counts were dismissed, but they were not the impactful ones of aiding and abetting fraud and others. Similar to Bank of America, substantial funds flowed through those accounts. More than $265 million in suspicious activity flowed through 11 accounts at Valley National Bank, but $39.6 million in direct investor deposits went into NRA bank accounts at Valley, which included $27 million that was transferred from other banks that were closing their accounts, and they found a home at Valley. There are many allegations within the complaint that are very factual, and we made them successfully on the motion to dismiss to the court, and that survived. So this litigation will also continue. But we're in discussions now with Valley on the litigation going forward, including a protective order, discovery schedule, as well as whether or not we would withdraw the reference as it's referred, whether or not the case would proceed in the bankruptcy court or the district court. That is still a pending discussion. So that is where that litigation is. Next. Deepit Anon and some of his affiliated entities, such as Sapphire. Deepit also filed a motion to dismiss, and we also defeated that motion to dismiss. So the allegations of aiding and abetting fraud and similar claims survived. There were some smaller counts that were not continuing, but the others are the ones that would lead to the largest recoveries are surviving and are continuing. So we're in discovery with them as well against Deepit Anon and his entities, including the Sapphire entities. That was essentially a vehicle by which Deepit Anon, it is alleged in the complaint, attracted investors that ultimately invested in NRIA and received distributions. We allege approximately $35 million of funds were transferred to from NRIA to Deepit and his affiliates. That he was also a pipeline for EB-5 investors. And there was a lot of what we called circular loan transactions, as alleged in the complaint, where Deepit Anon was participating. Those are all public information as alleged in the complaint. He has denied those allegations, but that litigation is continuing and is in the discovery phase, as you see here. Next litigation. Van Doon. Van Doon is an accounting firm that did work for the NRA entities pre-bankruptcy. In this case, we have agreed to mediate before Judge Doyne. That mediation is basically a quasi-judicially supervised mediation or discussion regarding potential settlement. That is coming up in April, and we will see whether or not we're able to consensually resolve that case and avoid protracted litigation, which would otherwise continue on a discovery schedule you see here. The allegations against this firm include aiding and abetting fraud, but also accountant malpractice claims. Next. Jamie Samuel, this individual and others are what we call essentially passive insiders, meaning they're insiders related to Nick Salzano, other family members, and Jamie was a former spouse of Nick Salzano, who you all know. she received substantial transfers, has been reluctant to come to the table with a resolution, and those transfers are the subject of a mediation that did not succeed because she was not able to come to the table with a settlement that would be acceptable to the litigation trust, or the liquidation trust. So that litigation is continuing. And will continue hopefully a pace sooner than the others because it's a less complex case. So we'd likely see a trial or a resolution in 2026. Next. Whipley is another matter similar to the Van Doon case, an accounting malpractice claim, as well as aiding and abetting claims for the fraud. Here we have a schedule that is being extended by a discussion, hopefully tomorrow, what's called a meet and confer meeting, which will include a continued discovery. We attempted to mediate this. It did this particular dispute with this accounting firm, and it was we were not able to settle it through a mediation. So the litigation will continue, and we'll be engaging in discovery relatively quickly. Next. DMR and the Echeverria litigation. So DMR, as you recall from my prior and our prior discussions on these meetings, is really a litigation arising out of construction. We've had some progress with insurance settlements that have been substantial for the benefit of the trust related to these. The first three are DMR related, the Gulfstream Views, Manhattan Avenue, and Bergen Line. We are in arbitration, which is a slightly more formalized version of mediation, close to a trial or a judicial proceeding, but with DMR on two of the projects, Gulfstream and Manhattan, and they will be starting in short order. Bergen Line, we're in settlement discussions with them. With Echeverria, we are not settled and are likely to proceed with the trial in 2026. These are all fairly substantial construction related litigations. Tony Ulisse and Rick and Tommy and Matthew are all very deeply involved in the factual relations as to this. And we're hoping that that will be successful as well for you. We've already had substantial recoveries on the insurance component of it, as well as some very progressed settlement discussions that may result in a fairly soon resolution of some of this. Next. Insider promoters. These are people who you may know, like Harrington and Cartosian and others who you probably as investors might have spoken to in the past. This is an important litigation because these were individuals who directly communicated with investors and facilitated the sale of securities. So there are various parties to this action, and there are various stages. So we are in very, very advanced settlement discussions, and we have settled some claims, for example, against Hapshi, an individual named Gaglani, Luca, and Rosenberg defendants, and others. So these are individuals within the case who we have either settled or in advanced settlement discussions with. We are in active mediation with Fallis and his entities before Judge Falk. That is ongoing and may or may not succeed. If it doesn't succeed, we're going to be in aggressive litigation with Fallis. He was instrumental in the sale, we believe, as alleged in the complaint, for a substantial amount of securities. We are in settlement negotiations, fairly advanced, but if it doesn't succeed, we're going to mediation with Judge Cantillo on Harrington very soon on March 26. And then on Amato, an individual who was an accountant who solicited approximately, or was participating, I should say, in the sale of securities related to certain investors, we have a potential mediation for a date to be determined with Judge Cantillo because she has become ill, and we'll see when that can be revived. But otherwise, discovery will continue, but we're attempting to settle this in lieu of accruing substantial legal fees to try to resolve this the best we can. We may have to litigate with Fallis, we may have to litigate with others, but we're going to try to resolve it. Next. McPhillan. McPhillan is an individual identified in the litigation that has since been resolved with U.S. Construction. But he is an individual who did not settle in that case. It is alleged that he participated in aiding and abetting the fraud in that litigation. And we are in discovery and depositions being teed up against McPhillan, who we believe facilitated some of the transfers of real estate and profited from the transaction as alleged in the complaint. So that is continuing in litigation. We also attempted to resolve it in mediation, but that failed with McPhillan. Next. Media Effective, you remember that one? We were paid $5 million. We appealed, they did not, the defendants. That's Javier Torres and Media Effective. We appealed that $5 million, that we got the $5 million cash. That part of the case was resolved. But we have aiding and abetting securities fraud and other claims against Media Effective that the court denied. We think that the court erred, and we brought it up to the district court for reconsideration. That appeal remains pending. It is historically the case that the district court is not as deliberate in moving these cases forward as the bankruptcy court, but it is pending and have all been consolidated. All the pending motions have been consolidated under one docket number 11, and is proceeding before the district court. So we'll have to see where that goes. If we win that, it would be an additional recovery beyond the $5 million. Now, we're looking at anticipated litigation. We are preparing to file a complaint against Bloomberg by the end of March. You know that company as an entity who obviously is a large media entity, well known for it and reputationally strong in the finance world. But there are allegations against Bloomberg. We have attempted to mediate with them pre-suit, and it failed. Carney Stanton, similar situation. That is a law firm in Florida, and an affiliated entity known as Crystal Title is part of that. And that they are out of Florida. They were active with NRA in the Florida market. And there are similar aiding and abetting claims that would likely be pursued against them also in March. As to others, I'm not going to say the others, but there are other litigations, one in particular, that may be brought against entities that that we discovered. We have claims against related to one of the litigations I just discussed earlier. As an example, where I can't give you a heads up of what that is until it's filed because of the pending litigation. There is one defensive litigation where one of the wind down entities, one or several of the wind down entities are identified as defendants because of an alleged environmental issue related to an adjacent property that is being vigorously defended. We're in active discovery, depositions are ongoing, not our litigation we wish to bring. It's being brought by other entities who are related to a separate property against us. And it's being defended, and we hope that is a positive outcome for everyone, and we don't have to pay anything beyond the cost of defending that lawsuit. That is, I believe, the litigation summary, and anyone who wishes to supplement, feel free to do so from the team, but otherwise that's the litigation summary. All right, Mike, investor questions? Mike, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Investor questions.
Good. The question that we've received the most is, when is the next distribution? Matthew, I'm going to defer to you on answering that question.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
As announced at the last town hall, we do not anticipate a distribution in 2026. We are continuing to pursue these litigation matters, but unless a big one hits, there probably will not be a distribution from litigation. And as you heard from Rick, the real estate projects are still under development, and those take a long time to build the projects. I did see the question, will investors ever get part of these settlements? You know, and of course, the answer to that is, yes, that's where we have made distributions from today. We've distributed over $100 million already, largely from litigation recoveries, and investors have received 22%. So, you know, we're not suing these people just for kicks. The goal is get money in, get the projects developed, and as money becomes available, get it out the door to all of the investors. These are the bad people that put you in the predicament that you're in, and we're going to go chase them down and get as much out of them as we can, and get it out to you. So your recoveries will come from litigation and will come from real estate. So the answer is yes.
We also received a number of questions, Lewis, that I'm going to throw to you on the compensation motion, docket number 4244. Can you just give a brief response to that?
Sure. So you all heard the real estate presentation. That suggests, and the projections appear to suggest, that we anticipate exceeding the disclosure statement projections on real estate recoveries. You've already received 22% distributions from litigation and real estate to this point, and additional recoveries are anticipated. The potential real estate recoveries, as I said, are anticipated to be greater than the disclosure statement, and they're doing a lot of work and doing what they can to maximize that recovery. The motion was principally filed to make sure we could retain the key personnel that, if they left, would be damaging to the projects, potentially putting all the projects at risk. So that was filed to make sure we could retain the key personnel essential to meet and exceed those projections. We only have 6 employees. It's a lean team. Losing Rick or Tommy or others could be very detrimental to maximizing the return on real estate investments, as alleged in the motion. To that end, an expert was retained after several experts were interviewed, and ultimately determined to retain one expert if the compensation proposal was in fact market. To make sure that it was market, and this was a nationally recognized expert. We filed a reply to those who expressed concerns or opposition to the motion. That's at docket number 4285, and you can find that on Omni's website. We just filed today to address the concerns regarding the compensation plan. And ultimately, the court will decide this motion if it must, and approve the compensation or not in the next short period. I think the hearings are on for next week next week. So that's the summary.
The next questions, and I'm just going to throw these together. Do you expect any more significant litigation wins, and what is the status of RICO charge? I'll answer the RICO charge question. The only RICO case that we filed, the only RICO complaint that we filed, was against USC. We reached a settlement on that charge. We are not currently pursuing any RICO charges against any other defendants at this time. As we've mentioned in previous town halls, RICO is a device that is very useful for obtaining leverage and pressure on defendants, because it does provide for treble damages. But even if you get treble damages, they can only pay what they have. So you can get a judgment for $2 billion, but if they only have 10,000, that's all you're going to get. We were able to use it successfully to reach a settlement with US Construction, but that is the end of any RICO charges in this case. So we are not pursuing any more RICO charges. Lewis, the other question was, do we expect any more significant litigation wins?
Well, I mean, like I mentioned at the very beginning, litigation recoveries are difficult to tell. There are points in a litigation where a defendant may, all through that litigation to that point, be very confrontational and defensive. At one point, though, they may realize that they have a greater risk of losing the entire litigation and come back to the table. We can't tell when each party hits that point. So Bank of America, Valley, Deepit, and others may hit that point at some point. We don't know. We have won the motions to dismiss. There's going to be discovery. The next likely, what we call dispositive motion, or motion that would be made by a defendant to, or us, to either win a judgment or to dismiss the case, would be a motion for summary judgment or something like it. When and if defendants lose that motion, at least generally speaking, that's when a defendant may or may not reach a decision point that they want to try to resolve the case before they go to trial because of the risk of loss. Many times, and you've heard this in TV shows and you've heard this in the press, the case is, quote, settled on the courthouse steps. That often happens, where we are all the way through discovery, motion practice, and then we've got our witnesses ready and they say, look, we can't take the risk. What can we do to settle this? It can go all the way that far. We never know. Sometimes people settle very early. Sometimes people settle pre-litigation. For example, many of the 22+ million dollars of recoveries that we just mentioned about, some were decided even pre-litigation and settled pre-litigation. So that happens.
Thank you, Lewis. Next question, is there a list of properties? Well, this presentation will be posted to the Omni website under the Investor Town Halls link, which is where you went to register for this town hall to join. This presentation will have obviously the list of real estate properties that was at the beginning of the real estate presentation. So you can find that there. Additionally, if you want to look at the historical list of properties, you can go onto the Omni site and look for the disclosure statement that you received when your vote was solicited for the plan in the bankruptcy case. The disclosure statement contains a detailed description of all the properties as of about June of 2023. So obviously the information is dated, but it does contain a list of what properties the debtor had at that time. The next question, taxes, when will we get our 25 tax document? As Tommy said earlier, the tax documents should come out in September or early October, as they did last year and as they did the year before that. Trust has to file an extension of time to file its partnership tax return, or excuse me, its grantor trust tax return. So that takes a lot of time. It is a complex entity with many sub-entities. And so that is a very complicated process and they need the additional time. Town hall logistics. Why aren't the updates every other month? Under the plan and liquidation trust agreement, after 2 years from the effective date of the plan, which was August 25th of 2023, the town halls were supposed to go from every 2 months to every 3 months. And so that is what we started doing at the beginning of this year. We're going to be having quarterly town halls from now on, just to avoid the repetition and avoid the expense of getting everybody together to do these calls. Those are the questions we received from the registrations. Now let's go to the questions that have been submitted since we've been here. From the top, Mr. Ward, who is the advisory board and why do they spend so much of our money? Are they part of Ice Miller? Please ask them to come to our meetings next month and tell us what they're doing to get our money back. How much do they cost anyway? Matthew, I will defer to you on that question since it's directed towards you.
The advisory board is actually on this town hall. So the advisory board is a group of 3 individuals, 2 investors, and 1 that was selected by the company who used to be involved in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy when it was still pending before the court. And those 3 individuals are overseers. And yes, they have engaged their own counsel, and yes, they are incurring cost. And if you have issues or disputes with them, I would suggest that you take it up with them. They're not part of Ice Miller.
The disclosure statement and the plan documents that were filed that I referenced earlier do have more information about how the liquidation trust is structured, what the advisory board's role is, and the identity of the advisory board members. Next question, which I believe we've answered, was the status of the prosecution of the various party of bad actors. We went through a detailed litigation discussion. In terms of the prosecutions of Nick Salzano and Art Scutaro, Nick Salzano was sentenced to 12 years in prison. I'm not sure what happened to Art Scutaro. Lewis, if you know the answer to that
question. He was sentenced. I don't remember the exact number of years, but he's in jail now.
The next unanswered question.
It was 4+ years, I believe.
Yeah.
The next question that has not yet been answered is that the advisory board saying no to $90 million in profits? What is their experience and expertise with real estate? That's a complicated question, Matthew or Lewis. When you want to take that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the premise is of the advisory board saying no to 90 million profit. I don't know if the investor or WebEx 12, wherever that is, can provide an understanding of what they mean and where they're getting that information. That'd be helpful. Hard to answer a question like that. The advisory board is advisory, as Matthew said, and they supervise under the plan, as that word is used, the liquidation trustee. Other than that, that's what the plan provides. But I don't know that we can answer that question otherwise without understanding where the understanding comes from the advisory board saying no to 90 million in profit.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if perhaps the question is a reference to the request to have financing approved for the Grand and the Metro, which when we did not get advisory board approval, we were constrained to go to court and file a motion before Judge Sherwood. So we put in the motion and advisory board objected to it. And ultimately, we resolved the dispute. So there now is another pending dispute before Judge Sherwood. We put in a motion to approve appropriate compensation for the staff. The advisory board has filed a 40-page brief with 200 pages of exhibits in opposition. And if it doesn't get resolved, that will go to the court. So, you know, those are the types of things where if you have questions about the advisory board, I would say reach out to them or their counsel, or just look at the pleadings. The pleadings tell the story. And if they don't get resolved, the judge will decide.
How long will we continue to receive monies from the rental properties? I mean, to the extent that the rental properties are continuing to be rented and not sold, I think that'll basically go through the end of the case, the sale of the last property.
I think they have a plan on that to some degree, right, Rick and Tommy?
Yeah, so the idea with any of the properties, right, is to complete it and then lease it up. So you're collecting rent throughout that process. You get the stabilization, which is generally considered to be 95%. You go through a sale process now, like we are with 4901, but you're collecting the rent up until somebody else owns the property, whether that's apartment rent or retail rent. We have our soon to be slip rental rent. So it's really as long as you own it, right, then we're entitled to the rental revenue.
Thank you. Where on the Omni site are the quarterly and monthly reports? I'm not readily finding them. If you scroll down right below, right above, actually, where it says investor town halls, there is a page for investor reports. I just received a report that it is not showing the latest one. I will make sure after this call that that gets updated. You can also find them on the docket if they're not listed there, but we will make sure that those are updated. That also has a list of investor schedules with a list of the contributing investors. When should we expect the next distribution? Again, we've discussed this. Currently, we do not have one scheduled. To the extent that there are any unexpected litigation recoveries, that may be enough to get a distribution in place, but otherwise, it's going to take some time before we're ready to do the next distribution. The next question I'm going to throw to Tommy. Tommy, what does AAR stand for?
AAR is an administrative adjustment request, which is, you know, otherwise a partnership tax return amendment. That's the answer.
Question, is there any update on the Mona Shaw settlement and when the EB5 investors' capital will be distributed? The Mona Shaw has settled. Contributing investor settlement forms were received from all the EB5 investors, and the projection is that we should be getting those checks released to them with their 22% distribution by the end of the month, if not sooner, as we try and work through them. Next question, I received a letter to buy my remaining claim. Any idea what percentage recovery we may receive so that I can see if their offer makes sense? Under the plan and the liquidation trust agreement, it is prohibited to sell or transfer claims. Transfers of claims will not be recognized by the liquidation trust. So in terms of that, that's the answer to that. In terms of the percentage recovery, I'm not sure if we can speak to where that's going to end up. We are very optimistic and pretty confident at this point that it'll be significantly greater than the 25 to 35% that we projected on the plan, seeing as how we've already given out 22. But we aren't really putting a specific number on where we expect it to end up at the end of the day right now. More questions about the Omni website. Again, I will try and make sure that's updated and through. This has already been answered. Thank you for sharing the information. Seems that things are moving in the right direction. Is the timeline still end of 2030 for total completion?
Matthew? I answered that one in the question and answer session. So just to be clear, I think that timing is generally accurate, but it's hard to predict with certainty, right? I don't think your timing is too far off, but I mean, there's always the chance that litigation, for example, against these lenders it could go on for years. That's not the hope, but you've seen Ponzi schemes, other Ponzi schemes where litigation with lenders goes on for, you know, for years and years. So we will try to prosecute those causes of action and resolve them. And if we don't resolve them, maybe they will be adjudicated within 4 years. Hopefully they will, but then you have appeals. So you can't predict it with certainty, but I would think that the answer is, relatively speaking, yes, your timing is accurate. On the real estate side, most of these projects will be completed by 2030. Hopefully they sell. Now, Philadelphia is a little bit of an exception. That's a three-phase project. We don't know if we'll do all three phases. If we do, maybe that spills beyond the time period. Also, Fort Lauderdale, very large project. That's a piece of dirt right now. So that one might spill over a little bit too. But I mean, the goal is to move quickly and efficiently and get this done. So I hope that answers the question.
Right, we currently have two more questions. First one, how much are we paying for the advisory board and their attorneys? All the fees are disclosed on the reports that are filed quarterly. There are separate line items for the estate professionals and for the advisory boards professionals. I don't have that number off the top of my head. I would leave it to people to go there to look. And then if we sold 4901, can we get a distribution? Matthew and Rick.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Oh, if we sold 4901 Bergenline, can we get a distribution? Is the question.
I would welcome Rick and Tommy to weigh in on that. 4901, which you guys may also hear referred to as Bergenline or the station, all of those are one project. You know, that is a big project in terms of scale. It's not a big project in terms of profit. And since it's earlier on the in terms of the timing for real estate sales, part of the funds there could be used to help give seed money towards projects, future development of other projects, bigger projects with higher projected returns. So it's going to be tough to get a distribution out of Bergenline, but perhaps coupled with, if there's litigation recoveries or claims reconciliation reductions, it's possible, but I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, and I think on that note, right, Rick and I and the rest of our team internally, we create and revise and update very, very thorough and detailed cash flow projections, you know, on a rolling basis. And we can't just isolate and say, you know, there's a certain amount of proceeds that come in at a date certain, and that kind of shuts everything else out. There's a lot of other, you know, costs to running the business, including all of the, you know, development costs to build these projects that are, you know, very substantial and are going to, you know, generate substantial recoveries to the trust. So we can't just, you know, release and kick out dollars every time they come in the door. But it's obviously considered as part of the process, but the station sale is not going to, you know, be substantial enough to trigger a distribution at this time.
I've had two more questions come up. Why are we prohibited from transferring our claims? It's not reasonable to expect everyone to wait until 2030 for this to settle. There are substantial tax considerations that require us to prohibit transfers of claims, just as there were restrictions on the transfers of your interest in NRIA when you had that interest. Similar restrictions are in place here to ensure that no adverse tax consequences are in place. That is the main reason why the restrictions on transferring claims is in place. The next question is, didn't you get $26 million in litigation recoveries since the last town hall? Where is that money going? Tommy, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of already answered that question to the extent that, you know, we're constantly revising the cash flow and considering where that cash, you know, needs to be deployed, including the development of, you know, as Matthew has answered, you know, in the Q&A and Rick has described through the real estate presentation, there's very substantial, you know, complex commercial real estate that we're developing here that requires capital infusions, and that's where the money is going. One other point that we did want to get to, I know the question came up about the advisory board's legal fees, and I was able to track down that number that we didn't have before. To date, that number is just shy of $3 million through November 2025, which is the last invoice that we've received. We're obviously still waiting on the additional invoices. We're not really sure why they're still delayed, but that's the number that we have incurred so far.
Tommy, is that since 2024? Tommy?
Yes, that was that's July 2024 through November 2025. There's also, an exhibit that was attached to our reply. Everyone can check out. It's Exhibit B, comparing the, the fees that their council incurs relative to the base salaries of the entire management team, which is, I think enlightening in the context that everyone's looking for.
Thank you. Next question. Thanks for showing the LinkedIn web address. There was a comment that if we cannot access LinkedIn, there will be another place to see this. Again, the Investor Town Hall webpage within a few days should have the recording, the audio recording, and the presentation posted. Be on the lookout for that. Again, that's where you went to register for this town hall in the first place. That's the other place to look for this. My money may get returned, but I'm losing on inflation. At the end, can we possibly get back 150% total? That is unlikely. Next question. If we can't transfer and these projects last until early 30s, how do we handle inheritances? Can we transfer to our grandkids at some point? So there are some circumstances under which you can transfer interests and inheritance or divorce, other things like that do allow for the transfer of interest in those particular cases. We unfortunately have had several investors who have passed away, and we've had to help facilitate getting the interest and getting the distributions out to their next of kin, which is very unfortunate. But we've been working with them, and so to the extent that happens, we will do everything we can to facilitate and make that as painless as possible for an otherwise very painful experience.
There's specific provisions within the plan that address that, right, Mike, that deal with for these specific instances. So I think for Ken, who asked that question, I think it's Ken, he can happy to email us and we'll send them those provisions.
Yep. That is the last question, assuming no more come in. Matthew, for your closing statement.
Sure. Thank you. I think in terms of the order here, I first just want to call attention to the financing that was identified for the grant in the metro. It's a big deal. It shows that we're serious about the development of projects. We have the means to get these projects done. And as Rick said, this is a very favorable testament to the management team and the small staff of the company. You're talking a half a dozen people for coordinating the real estate development and the financing. And this has been many, many months in the making. We have, and I've said this countless times on town halls, every step of the way that we pursue real estate or we pursue litigation, there are roadblocks. There are people that get in the way and there are unexpected things that come up. I certainly would not have expected the advisory board, our own advisory board, to be one of the roadblocks to approving that financing. Be that as it may, we are moving forward and we're making progress. And I just, kudos to the management team for that. So thank you. On the litigation front, we have continued to mediate many of these matters. I feel like I'm traveling throughout the entire state of New Jersey on a regular basis. We were up there last week on the Fallis mediation. We're going to be back up there for the Harrington mediation. We're trying to get these settled. That's the most efficient way to get money out of these litigation matters. But if people don't settle for an appropriate amount, we will continue to sue them and we'll chase them in the courts. And as Lewis mentioned, we've obtained nearly $25 million in litigation recoveries just since the last town hall. So, and as we've said before, we've now achieved something like $250 million in litigation recoveries to date. We have made 22% distributions. I think I mentioned that in my answers to one of the questions that was in the comments. Most of the claims reconciliation work has been completed since the last town hall. We did file one more claims objection, which I think brings nearly to close the completion of claims reconciliation for most of the claims that were still out there. So that was a good development too. But everybody on this call is continuing to work hard for you, the investors. And I just, it breaks my heart that people were put in the predicament that they're in, But we are going to get you the best result possible through litigation and through the real estate, and we are firmly committed to do it. So we're here working for you. We appreciate your time and your attention this evening as you regularly show up on these town halls, and certainly feel free to reach out.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining the meeting. Hopefully this is informative. Reach out to us with any questions. And thank you again, everyone who participated on behalf of Liquidation Trust and AIRN. So thank you, everyone.